It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, 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 Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, in the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. We have on the air with us Gerald Celante, and he's founder of the Trends Research Institute, which was done back in 1980. He's a pioneer trend strategist. He's author of the national bestseller Trends 2000 and Trend Tracking, Warner Books. And I want to make sure we get right to it, Gerald. I want to the people to survive this thing. I want to survive. It's coming. There's no guaranteed. Done. The Humpty Dumpty's falling down, and they're not going to put it back together again. What will happen after? I haven't heard you talk about that. I really would like to know what happens after the fall. In the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy.
Well, what happens with all governments as they start, as societies start to break down, they clamp down harder. So we're going to see more of that. You're going to start seeing more social unrest, crime increasing, jobs lost, the job situation. Let's look at it. They promised that with the Obama stimulus program, they'd be creating new jobs. They haven't happened. We saw in May, what was it, over 400,000 temporary jobs from census takers. And those jobs will disappear by the end of the summer.
And they kept firing them and rehiring them and firing them and rehiring them so they can get their numbers up.
Yeah, so they're even cooking those miserable numbers. So what people are going to realize is that they're not going to have a lot of disposable income, and that they're going to have to take measures to do with less. But having said that, often, you know, as that old saying goes, and it's true in so many different fields and professions, less is more. Look at what the poor people in this country look like compared to poor people in other countries. I've been reading studies now that in the Bronx and Brooklyn, that the pregnant women are dying and the infant mortality rate is skyrocketing because they're among the poorest, but they're also obese. So when we're looking at cutting back on the fat of budgets, we're also looking about getting in shape spiritually, emotionally, and physically, because only the tough are going to survive this. So it means ripping up that lawn that you have out there that's growing grass that you can't eat and do something with it productive. It means buying quality. And to bring the country around again, we have to start doing business with each other. As I mentioned over and over again with every time I have an opportunity, is that the only way this country is going to come back is to go back to the model when it was working the best. And that's when it was about Main Street. People didn't shop at Walmarts. They went to mom and pops. Nobody invested in Wall Street or gambled on Wall Street, I should say. They invested in their own businesses and themselves. And if you have a kid, because things are going to get very tough, that are going to college, you better think twice about wasting this money on the college industrial complex to get them a job. And after they get a degree in business administration, maybe they'll be lucky to work at Sports Authority. They're wasting their money. Unless you're going to get an education that's going to have a return on investment or a vocational education, don't waste your dough. Current events form future trends, as I mentioned. Today's New York Times, a front page story. Ernest, you can't make this one up. Great great law schools like the esteemed Loyola University in Chicago and others, they're bumping up the kids' grade average to give them a higher passing grade so that then maybe they'll be able to get a better job because they can't find one at all now. And then we read about teachers that are cooking the books on showing, and this is in grade school, that their students are doing better. They're going into their exams and fixing them so they'll get a higher grade average so the teachers can get a bonus. And that the school districts won't lose federal money. So before you waste your dough on the college industrial complex, think twice. You know, kids are getting out of school with $100,000 in debt. And what? Forgetting, I read this in the New York Times, a great story. This girl complained, she graduated NYU, $100,000 in debt. You know what she took? I had to suffer through the whole story to find out. Women's studies and religion. And they got away with selling you this course? And they talk about Madoff and Ponzi?
Okay, let me explain something to you, give you a perspective on how my family's dealing with this. I have four children, two boys, two girls, from 20 to 24. I've been a libertarian activist since, the early 90s. I get it. I saw what was coming. It was, amen. Here we go. So how do you raise children? Well, first thing you do is you take them out of the public schools. That's the first thing. Then you start instilling in them the importance of learning trades, making stuff. Both of my sons are machinists. So, and they're in their early 20s. My younger son at 21, married, has a second kid on the way, already bought himself a CNC mill so that he could actually produce something. In our backyard in Central Phoenix, I have six chickens and a garden, okay? We are learning how to, and we buy all kinds of seeds. We got food underneath the bed. I am taking this serious. I know what's coming. And we train our children to be able to, can you fix your car? My daughters, when I go out and change in the front disc brakes, they're out there helping. I'm going, no, you need to know this stuff. This is having the ability to lay block, having the ability to use a hammer. These are the things that are going to help you survive. And I want to make sure that, that gets emphasized. And I'm glad you're here to help me with this because I want my audience to survive this thing. I mean, we're looking at right now, we have stats that the banks now own a greater share of residential housing net worth in the United States than all individual Americans put together.
And what are we into now for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? It's going to cost us over $400 billion, and they keep doing it. And then we look at the May numbers came out for new housing starts, and they were, quote, disappointing. Disappointing by whom? Any dope could see this coming. Once they yanked out the tax break, you knew this thing was going to go down. And you said it. Well, you're teaching your children. And it goes a couple of steps beyond that. It also becomes... If there's a terrorist strike, what are you going to do? Do you have a network of people that you could depend on? Are you around like-minded people that could help you? What if there's a financial calamity? Because, the last time when we had a terrorist strike, they closed down Wall Street. Oh, and you say, so what? Well, I live north of Ground Zero. I saw this coming. I've been writing about it. It was in the Trends Journal, our publication, in Trends 2000 that came out in 97. We said this was going to happen. No surprise to me. I wanted to get out of here because I didn't know if they'd hit the Indian Point nuclear power plant. Ernest, I tried to get my money out of CDs. I couldn't because they're traded on Wall Street and Wall Street's closed. This time when there's a terrorist strike, they'll possibly close the banks. And then when they reopen the banks after a holiday, look what they did the last time they had a holiday. They devalued the dollar. They made people sell their gold back because the dollar was pegged to gold. They made them sell it back at $20.67 an ounce. And if you didn't sell it back, you go to jail. And when they got it all in, or they thought they did, they re-pegged it to $35 an ounce.
Of course they did.
They devalued the dollar. They're going to do it again.
No, I think, I tell you what, you know, in the next half hour, we have a gentleman, H.L. Quist. He's in. We're going to be talking, you know, continue this conversation. And I remember we had an interview last week, and I said this. Everybody's like, you know, the Amaro. And I'm going, are you kidding me? They're going to skip the Amaro. They're going to go straight to the world, though. So do you see that? I can already see the trend that they are going to try and convince us, and they'll come up with some excuse that they're going to do what you're saying. It'll be a bank holiday. And you know what? To save the planet and, I don't know, for whatever excuse they think we're going to buy, they're going to try and get us all on one global currency. And who will be in charge of it?
We believe that that's not in the cards yet because of the problems going on with the euro. What we see coming first is a devaluation of the currencies.
Yeah, well, you know, and then what? Then they combine them.
And that's why I love gold.
Gold. You know, we'll talk about that very thing when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my very special guest, Gerald Celente, TrendsResearch.com. Go check it out. TrendsResearch.com, Gerald Celente, when we come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. The ashes
oh, the love's right here and Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, Gerald Celente. And this is exactly what you're talking about, Gerald. I mean, you know, we're going to get back to the basics. And that's from the Black Eyed Peas from 2002. Man, don't think these young people don't get it. They're going, look, all this stuff that you guys think's important, it just ain't. You know, it's just, you know, we're going to get back to, you know, being human beings again one of these days. And I want to give you this last segment, you know, to comment on, you know, I want you to save my audience. How are we going to save my audience, man?
Well, you mentioned about what do we see it looking like. Well, let me tell you why it's so important, the things that you're talking about in survivalism and neo-survivalism. When we say we're going into the greatest depression, and you're talking about what your children know how to do. And I, when I used to live in the country, I don't anymore. I had my own chickens. We used to put up all our food for the year. And they used to even make my own prosciuttos. You know, I was really into it. But when you think now and compare it to the last depression, back in the last depression, a huge segment of the population lived on farms. They were immigrants. They knew how to do things with their hands. They were craftspeople. Now, what are we? We're a nation of service workers that know how to do nothing. So the first thing, number one, don't spend a penny you don't have to. When you do buy something of quality. Stop eating junk. I don't eat corporate food. And when you eat better, you eat less. It's this junk that fills you up. You need to get into shape, as I mentioned, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. I am a believer of Second Amendment rights. You better be armed because the other people are dangerous.
You know, this is another thing I wanted to get into is here in Arizona, Phoenix, of course, you know, real estate is a big deal. We'll be talking about that coming up with Mr. Quist. But, you know, the banks, they're not liquidating this shadow inventory. They're not even foreclosing anymore, really. I mean, you know, we have all this inventory. It was a few years ago. Heck, 40% of the houses for sale in Arizona were vacant. It was all, you know, speculation. And then we haven't even gotten to the commercial real estate yet. You know, so
yeah, there's a reason why they're not doing that. They're holding back on dumping the inventory. This is coming from the Fed down. because if they keep dumping the inventory on the market, they're going to keep driving the prices down. And the Fed is trying to unwind its positions. So this is all they're going to be forced to do it very shortly. And as you point out, you look at what's going on in commercial real estate. They're giving low interest loans to the biggest commercial real estate developers to keep propping them up. When the stimulus money runs out, the collapse is going to happen. That's what you're seeing happening in Europe. That's what you're going to start seeing happening in the U.S. It's going to happen worldwide. So that's why they're not dumping these products on the market, because they're afraid of driving the prices down further. So as thinking about survival, I could buy any, I'm not bragging, I could buy any car I want. I own a 1994 Audi Cabriolet. And people ask me, well, how come you don't own an American car? Because they're junk, and I don't want to buy a big, stupid SUV. That's why I didn't buy one. And if they were great cars, I would.
You know, this is one thing, Gerald, I wanted to, I say this a lot. For years I've been saying this, and nobody really understood what I meant. And it seems like, you're the guy that understands. I always said, it's not going to happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. You'll obviously see it. There's trends. It's going to come. And then all of a sudden, we're going to wake up one morning and go, oh, my goodness. I remember when silver used to be double digits. So are you confident that we can, because silver goes up and down. It's one of the more volatile ones. But, I mean, is it something to buy and hold and just let it go down to $3? It doesn't matter.
That's the way I feel about gold. I've been buying gold since 1978. In 2001, in our Trends Journal, we forecast the bottom of gold. And I continue to buy it. We're forecasting gold 2000. And you said it. You buy those. Look, if you bought gold at 2001, and when it was $275, and now it's trading at roughly what? $1,250. How much money did you make? As opposed to, remember those shills, those Wall Street barkers out there telling you when the market collapsed, the dot-com collapsed, hey, listen, you got to be in this for the long haul. You don't want to sell out. Oh, no. No, look at those great Lehman Brothers stock. Oh, and that General Motors, those legacy stock. With gold, even if it collapses to half its value, the same with silver, you're going to have something. Anybody that invests in the stock market, don't cry to me because you lost going to Las Vegas or Atlantic City. It's the same game, and it's even worse because the game is rigged.
Before we run out of time here, is there a place we can go? Is the United States going to hit the reset button and the states secede? Are we going to do away with the federal government? Are we moving to another country? I mean, what do we do? We got to fight another revolution? What do we got to do?
Well, the second American Revolution has begun. They're mocking these tea parties. That's only the beginning of it. And again, we had forecast this long before it happened. So those that didn't see it coming are saying what's going to happen next. No, this is just the beginning. As secessionists, yes. The state to look to is Vermont, the Second Vermont Republic, Thomas Naylor, who's heading that one. We could see the United States breaking up like the former Soviet Union. It's a reality. People, you were talking before about, them not being able to deal with this oil disaster. The other thing is, let's remember who these people are. They're a bunch of losers. Everything the government touches, it turns to rot. Look what the great job. They have Katrina quality rescue skills. Oh, they're doing a great job fighting those wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's the same old story. More time, more men, more money. And now they're bringing this guy McChrystal meth back into the States and out on the carpet for calling the people in Washington a bunch of jerks. Look, you know who's running the country, Ernest? Remember the guys in high school and college that wanted to be the class president, the head of the student council?
Shiny badgers, the guys that want the shiny badge.
Right,
it's going to make them feel better.
The guys that used to suck up and brown nose, the self-serving and the ambitious, the insincere. Well, here they are, folks. They follow their career path. They're called politicians. You couldn't stand them in high school and college, and now you're looking up to them and asking you to lead them. If you do, and if you are, you deserve what you get.
You know,
it's
Gerald,
the
one thing.
Red carpet crowd.
Gerald, one thing I wanted to. You know, we're part of the. And, you know, I've been advocating Loveolution. In fact, I'm the one that came up with the Ron Paul Revolution logo. You know, and it's, you know, the love. We advocate. I went all over the country dealing with all these young people. I'm going to Porkfest, an event in New Hampshire tomorrow with thousands of these young people there. I'll be speaking to them. And I'm telling you, I have been pressing and advocating for absolutely a revolution. But do we really have to physically oppose them? Can we just ignore them? Can we go agorist? Can we just do what you were talking about and just trade amongst ourselves and try and stay out of it? Or are they going to come after us anyway?
No, again, we were looking for an intellectual revolution. Remember what I said, get physically, mentally, and spiritually healthy. When the people are ready, the leader will appear.
Absolutely. Gerald, it was such a pleasure having you. Hopefully you'll come back again.
Oh, anytime. Thank you, Ernest.
Thank you, Gerald. TrendsResearch.com. Oh, and you want to stay for HL Quiz. We're going to have some more fun here on Declare Your Independence.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Declare your independence. How about some truth, justice, and what used to be the American way, whatever that was. You know, it's not what they told us in junior high, I can tell you that. You know, I mean, it used to be, that's why they do it in junior high. You know, I figured it out. This is why they have junior high separate from elementary and high school. It's right when you're starting to go through puberty. It's right when you're starting to question authority. And they're going, this is how you question authority. You do it this way. You vote this way. You do this thing. This is how you do it. And I'm going, okay. Well, how has a couple of generations of government schooling served us? I don't know. We're not doing too well. Well, we got in H.L. Quist. Has been, it was a great interview we had before, and I might even let him talk this time. So I know. But, you know, the one thing, and how do I refer to you, HL?
How are you today? I'm glad to be back.
You know, and one thing I wanted to do, you're, go ahead and introduce yourself. I mean, you've been a developer, you've been real estate, you teach at the real estate school here.
17 years, yep.
You know, so this is what you know. You know, real estate here in Arizona IA. Yes. And, you know, you've been predicting a lot of this stuff on your own, haven't you?
Every major turn in the market since 1987.
Well, that's some street cred. You know?
And I've been referred to as Gerald Celente Light.
Yeah.
I've admired him for years.
He is passionate. Yes. You know, one thing that my wife heard you gave one of the presentations how I got your information, and she called me, and she's just like, you got to meet this guy. So she went up to you right after you gave your presentation. She goes up and she goes, you're a Ron Paul guy, aren't you?
Oh, you bet. Told her I had met him when he was here, yes.
Yeah, no, we've had him speak at our Freedom Summits.
It's certainly.
Three times, you know. Uh-huh. We may get him again this year. You know, the one thing that I did want, we're going to use Arizona as an example. Now, Arizona, we have special problems. Here in Arizona, the per capita, per person debt of the state is greater than any other state, including California. California may be the sixth largest economy in the planet, and that's a big money. But when it comes to carving up how much we owe, Arizona's in a world of hurt.
Wow.
So we're, they're selling the state buildings. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's right.
So here we have a situation to where I'm looking at the landscape here, and it's still, you know, Phoenix is a beautiful place. You know, it's nice. You know, we're doing okay, but I think that's going to change. You start getting poor in Phoenix, and you can't afford your electric bill. We call air conditioning life support, you know, and the electric bill is going up.
I just got back, Ernest, from New Mexico. We were over there at the family ranch for a week, and that's our sanctuary.
Yeah, you got
fact,
one.
I did. Yeah, we got one. We got the farm. Which, as a matter of fact, the neighbors want to lease the water for $300 an acre.
Well, okay.
I you can do make that. More. You can make a lot more money on leasing water than you can on farming. That's for darn sure.
Wow, man. Well, that's good that you have water. How long have you had your ranch?
Well, my wife's grandparents settled there and got under the Homestead Act in 1884.
Ooh.
So it's been continuous in the family since then.
Well, congratulations, you guys
it's
kept on
It's got three
that.
Big homes on it, you know, and it's got all the conveniences and... Our house has got refrigerated air and the whole nine yards, so it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, power generation.
We haven't set that up yet. But
you know, mm-hmm. we have a good friend of mine. He's one of the supervisors for changing out the nuclear core at Palo Verde, mm-hmm. and he lives in Tonopah, which is just like 10 right. miles past there. And he got 8 acres, and he's like, I'm not paying your $30,000. I'll do it myself. For that, I can have my own thing. He's got, you know, backup generators, but he has solar, wind, a well, his own septic. Uh-huh. He does everything satellite, cell phone, totally off-grid.
Right.
And he's going, you know, but I don't have enough water. It doesn't do, you know, to do a lot of irrigation. So what did he do? He built a cistern in the wash. Every time it rains, it fills it up.
Right.
You know, so he's going, I'm good, man. It sucks to be y'all. And this is in the desert. But this is the kind of thought process you got to have. Who does this kind of stuff? People that know what's coming. What do you think's coming?
Well, I'm right on the same wavelength as Gerald is, and I've been talking about this for a number of years. I have forecast every major boom and bust cycle since 1987, and of course, a lot of it was real estate oriented. I was in the development business in the 80s, and started in 83, and we saw the market coming to an end in the end of the 80s. And one thing that happened that was really interesting, which I think pertains to today, is in 1985, the G7 got together at the Plaza Hotel in New York City, and they came to the conclusion that the dollar was too strong and it should be devalued. And they did. They devalued the dollar, and, you know, those were the days of Michael Milken and high interest rates and so forth. And that was a stimulus for real estate development. We had been turned down by I don't know how many banks for loans for develop our project in Scottsdale. And the bankers came back and calling on us. Well, do you still need that money? And, of course, we took it and put together our project. But for 2 years, from 85 to 87, which ended with a crash, the stock market crash of 87, real estate, commodities, gold, everything was booming. And I see that happening again, is that we're going to do not only a market devaluation of the dollar, but a purposeful, a deliberate devaluation of the dollar.
Okay, I want to talk about this because this is of interest, and we need to understand what happened. When you say they devalued the dollar, there's masters of the universe go around. Right. They got dials. Whenever you hear a number, oh, the number in comparison with the other currency, and we got the percentage and the inflation rate of the they get a number. All I know is that they're going to turn a dial somewhere. They're just justifying some dial being turned, and it's going to screw somebody and help somebody else. And I guarantee that somebody else that's going to help is their buddies, okay? So when they do this, they go up and we're going to turn this dial and we're going to devalue the dollar. One, how did they do that? And two, what was the reason by which they did that? Why?
Well, the way they do that, they get the central banks around the world to either buy or sell that particular currency. So when they just made the decision to devalue the U.S. currency, that the central banks, the six other banks, were selling U.S. dollars, which, of course, the market value of the dollar dropped. You know, it's just like selling other assets. If you got more sellers than buyers, well,
they just flooded the market with dollars.
Yeah, and okay. The way they did that, the reason they did that is that U.S. interest rates were so high, and the dollar was strong versus other currencies, you know, so we were in a terrible position competitively to export any goods. So that was a deliberate scheme called the Plaza Accord, and it had an immediate impact. And I was on the front line. I was developing real estate, and money became easier to get, and land values appreciated. And that was a commercial real estate boom in the mid-'80s.
Okay, why? I still don't understand. How does that? Well, let's put it this way. In the national interest, I always hear this, you know, national security, national interest, national. Let me tell you what the national is. And ain't me, okay? It's national, right. Maybe the government, maybe, you know, corporate America lobbyists, how many congressmen are owned. Mm-hmm. It may be in their interest, but it's not. So I'm wondering, in the national interest, it was that they made dollars cheaper. You know, they wanted to devalue it. They made, all of a sudden, now we have, they keep saying this, well, you can export more and so on. Well, that it also has an impact on domestic manufacturing, up, down. I mean, what makes them so smart to think that they can turn these dials? Why don't they just get their hand off the dial, let the free market deal with it?
Well, we may have reached the point, though, where they've lost control. That they're manipulating.
They never had control.
Well,
they had an effect.
They got us into this position.
They had an effect.
The masters of the universe got us to where we are.
The free market always rules. It just gets delayed. You know, they can sit there and change numbers and, you know, and allocate from here to there and so on. But there is a mean that is set by the free market. It will always come back. They will always try and reinflate the bubble. They will always try to create a new one. They'll always try to get somebody that benefits over somebody else. But in the end, it always balances out.
And two, what it always ends up being, Ernie, is it's a short-term fix that sets us up for a longer-term problem. That's the whole thing I traced in my books, all this history since 74. Every time we've had a recession or depression or whatever, then you get Congress in the act, you get the Federal Reserve, you get the Treasury, and they create this stimulus package, just like we did, which the last one was, of course, obscene. But every time they do that, it sets us up for a longer term problem. And you can trace the crash of 74, 81, 91, and 2002. It's the same system that they've done. But right now, you see the Fed's out of bullets. And they can't lower interest rates anymore, but they can just keep monetizing debt. But that's the history of boom and bust cycles.
Well, when we come back, we're about ready to hit a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about this. When you have, well, they did this in the 70s, they did this in the 80s, did this in the 90s. They're not separate events. They're all part of the same accumulation of crap. You know, it's not
40 years.
It's not the same. It's not different. It's all the same thing. By the
just
same people.
Variations of the same theme.
It's the same names. Well, we'll talk about those names, you know, when we come back. You know, somebody benefit. I guarantee your name ain't on the list. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same.
Dude.
There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Oh, and the man's coming. Yeah, he's coming around. You know, you go, you know, who's the man, HL? I mean, you know, who's the man?
Johnny Cash.
That's the man right there. But I'm like, you know, there's a man coming around. Well, there's definitely a man coming around. I'm just wondering, you know, which badge is he going to have?
Well, we only see those pretenders. You know, I've often said, and time and time again in my real estate class, I tell people that, like, Alan Greenspan was a hired gun. He's a hired gun for the bankers. And we, you know, it was Alan Greenspan that got the repeal of Glass-Steagall.
And in the late 60s, he's like a Randian guy. He was all Mr. Gold.
Well, and
then he comes out being, a traitor.
Yeah. Ayn Rand, poor lady, has turned over in her grave.
Spinning. Yeah. You hear that humming sound? Man, they're spinning. You know, so now, you know, tell us, I hear Glass-Steagall a lot. You know, Dr. Paul refers to it a lot. Can you explain that for the audience, please?
Well, today mimics yesterday. You know, during the 1929 crash, everybody wanted to find out, of course, FDR comes into office and so forth. Well, they're going to find out who in the hell created this mess. So they had all these hearings, and they had what they called the Pecora hearings. And this little attorney called by the name of Pecora just called all of these bankers and all these investment people and so forth and just had this huge testimony. Well, out of that, of course, they blamed the bankers and the Wall Street and so forth for creating the crash. So they enacted a bill called the Glass-Steagall Act, which prohibited the banks from trading derivatives and trading stocks and bonds and equities and so forth and doing speculation. They separated banks from investment banks. And we've been living with Glass-Steagall for all these years. And when Alan Greenspan became chairman of the Federal Reserve in 1987, his primary goal as a hired gun was get that damn Glass-Steagall repealed. And okay, that's what he did. It took him 10 years to do it. But that was part of the scheme.
Okay, but what did Glass-Steagall do, really? I mean, you know, I'm sure I know what he was screaming. He's going, free market should reign, and everybody should be able to do whatever
laissez-faire.
They want.
Laissez-faire.
You know, and my problem, it was like in the 80s, where you have Reagan during the SNL, they go, you know, you can spend whatever the savings and loans could only invest in certain things. They couldn't invest in, you know, they do residential. Like they say, well, we're going to let you do whatever you want. But we're still going to insure your deposits. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, this is where they go to libertarians and they'll say, you don't want any regulation. And this is what happens. I'm going, let me tell you what regulation is. Being able to fail, that's regulation. You know, you mess up.
That's laissez-faire.
Yeah, that's real laissez-faire. That's a free market. Yeah. Don't sit there and tell me we got a free market because we don't. Sure as heck when we got all these bailouts and so on. So I'm looking at Glass-Steagall and I'm going, okay, well, you gave them the ability to be able to do banks, to be able to invest and do play all these games.
No. Glass-Steagall prevented the banks from being involved in equities, derivatives, and trading and speculation and leverage.
No, but they did away with that. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, 1999. Well, that sets the stage. And then Greenspan, of course, defended the bank's use of derivatives. You know, when long-term capital management failed in 1998, I mean, the handwriting was on the wall. The black box theory, you know, of using derivatives to get these outlandish returns, it proved that it didn't work. But Greenspan was steadfast. He wanted the banks to have the authority to trade, speculate, use leverage. And that was the beginning of this, creating this subprime bubble.
Okay, let's go ahead and let's make sure the audience understands. Derivatives. Whenever I had, especially during the realization, when you had Bill Bonner and Addison Wiggins and so on, and Agora Financial, and these guys are starting to come up and saying, derivatives, oh my goodness, we have hundreds of trillions of dollars, and you know, it's all going to come down, here it comes. And derivatives, what the heck's that? And then you have it explained to you, and I'll say, oh, so it's like an insurance policy. No, it's not. It's not insurance. Okay. And the reason they would say that is because insurance has its own criteria. You're supposed to have reserves. You got it. And they did not want to use that word. But as I understood it, it worked the same way. You're if this thing died, whatever it is, it's just derived from some index, from, you know, the weather. I mean, you could just pick, you know, whatever, you know, how fast a horse runs. I mean, you just pick something and they create this derivative. And if it goes down or up or whatever the contract is, well, it has a payoff. Well, I'm going, well, heck, you know, if you know what's going to happen to like subprime or something, guess what derivative you're doing? Mm-hmm. And you keep sell it again. And you said you got an AIDS patient in bed and you're just selling, you know, 50 insurance policies on him dying. Goldman Sachs goes and buys them all up and says, yep, die.
Well, actually, what AIG was doing was ensuring that the parties to the derivative would perform. I mean, in the event that they didn't perform, the holder of the derivative would be paid off. You know, I use the example of Goldman Sachs. You see, they sold all of they paid AIG the insurance premium to guarantee that they would be paid in the event there was a default on the other side of the trade.
With what?
Well, they're using the reserves of AIG, which, of course, they went through very, very quickly when all the claims came in to collect on those policies.
Okay, was there a reserve requirement for them to be able to pay this off?
You know? Well, yeah, but it was reserves under the insurance code.
So it was insurance.
Yes, it was insurance. It really was insurance. And the reason why AIG got into the game is that they weren't regulated by the SEC.
Because they're insurance.
Because they're an insurance company. They had established reserve. And really, you know, when you get right down to it, Ernie, is that no one really knew what they were insuring except, what was his name, Joe Casanova or whatever his name was at AIG. I mean, the guys at the head of AIG, they didn't know. They just saw the earnings coming in, and they close their eyes to it.
You know, when this first started coming out, I did my best to try and understand it. And what I found out is the guys that were selling it and doing it, they didn't understand it.
That's right.
They had no clue what was going on. So what I found out was, is there's, you know, some Harvard, Yale kid, you know, 20-something years old that knew how to do an algorithm or something that bought a castle in the United Kingdom, you know. These kids just came up with this financial instrument. They just made it up.
Well, a lot of that, you know, the long-term capital management, one of the principals of that company got the Nobel Prize in economics for coming up with the Black's Box, which was the whole derivative game, which failed. He comes back to the U.S. and he raises all this money from institutional investors, and within a short period of time, they lose $5 billion in one day after Russia defaults on its sovereign debt. But it was obvious that this whole game was this. By then, it was up to $200 trillion, and at the subprime broke in 2007, it was $600 trillion in value of these derivatives. But they proved that it didn't work. But Greenspan was the guy that defended it at Congress and said the banks have got to have the right to use this vehicle to protect themselves.
You know, it's like, you know, I can't even make a good word picture to describe what it's like. It's like, let's say you have $100,000 in credit card debt, and you're able to make the minimum payment, and then all of a sudden, one of the spouses loses their job. You can't make the minimum payment anymore. The whole thing falls. You know, I'm trying to get a word picture that describes why, because it only took a little bit. It only took, you know, out of $200 trillion, how much was Russia's debt? $5 billion or something? You know, what'd you say?
Well, no, Russia's debt was a lot more than that.
Well, I mean, but, that they defaulted
but,
on.
But the leverage, you know, was 40 to 1 or 50 to 1 or even 100 to 1 with long-term capital management. It's just like in the subprime. One thing that was really important about the subprime thing that got through to me when I read Michael Lewis's book is that in the tranches of triple B debt.
Okay, now define tranches. Know that.
You start with the best credits where you got triple A, which there weren't any home mortgages that were triple A, you know, when you get right down to it.
Well, Moody said there was.
But you go all the way from triple A, double A, but triple B.
So it's groupings of.
Yeah, groupings of. Credit that they, you know, anyway, they affixed it to that particular grade. Triple A being the best and the junk being unrated, okay? Well, triple B is somewhere in the middle. But with the leverage that these guys were using through the use of derivatives, an 8% default rate of this whole tranche of triple B debt made the whole thing collapse. So if you had $100 million in triple B debt, which some of these investors had, they were shorting it, just an 8% default created the whole loss in the entire $100 million.
Okay, now that's one thing that we can.
That's leverage. You know.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
that's deleverage.
I want to make sure that, you know, the people understand. Now we have a default on this. Well, it's a derivative. It's not really the asset underneath it, is it? I mean, when it fails, what do you have left over? Who gets the actual homes?
Well, as it started out, when they were writing these credit default derivatives and so forth, there was an underlying asset. There was a home. There was a homeowner, there was a borrower, you know, there was a mortgage. That was the underlining asset. But it got so absurd that Goldman Sachs was issuing paper that had no underlying asset whatsoever. I call them avatars. They were creating derivatives out of nothing, out of thin air.
Just this paper goes up and down depending on this other paper over here. But, oh, by the way, there's no link to it.
Yeah, that's
so when it goes down, then what? Who are you left with?
There's nothing.
I got wallpaper. It's a depression all over again. We're going to wallpaper our bathroom with our stock certificates. Yeah, here it comes. You got wallpaper paste. You're going to need it. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence, where you can declare your independence, too. And it's real easy. You know how you do it? Here's how you do it. Here you go. You ready? I declare my independence. And you know what you don't need? A government form. You just do it. We'll be right back.